Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman. In this episode, I'll be once again talking to Ryan O'Donovan, who writes about film for Get West London. I'll be asking Ryan several questions, which will include his thoughts on the January transfer window, match decisions for Slavisa with his squad, and on top of that, Ryan has written several interesting articles lately that I'm curious to ask him about. We have much to discuss in this interview. Before I do anything else, I have to welcome Ryan back to the show. Ryan, how you doing? Thank you for joining me today.
That's all right, Russ. It's good to be back. How you doing?
I am doing well, my friend. Listen, there are several things I want to talk to you about. And we had hoped to talk last week, but we couldn't get our schedules to come together. But now we are here and we're going to have a nice lengthy chat. But I have to start talking to you about the January transfer window. I think that's a great place for us to start our discussion. And let's start here, because we're going to focus obviously a great deal on what happened that last day. But let's start and get your thoughts on Fulham signing left-back Matt Target on loan from Southampton. Already, I've seen him play a few times. I think he's really impressed. Your thoughts on this loan signing?
Yeah, so I'm really impressed with Matt Target. You know, I'm a big fan of defenders. I think I've mentioned a million times now that I think defenders win you championships. And I think Target is a really, really good signing for Fulham. You know, he looked in the game he started on the weekend against Nottingham Forest, he oozed Premier League quality for me. You know, you could tell he's been in a Premier League academy. Absolutely. And you could tell he's played Premier League football before. What really stood out for me was his ability going forward. He wasn't scared to put in first-time crosses. So the ball would come over from Ollie Norwood and his first touch was his cross, basically. And I don't think that's something we've seen with Fulham left-backs for a long time, you know.
Right.
I know everyone said Scott Malone was a good left-back. He was good, but he didn't have that in his arsenal. I don't think I ever saw him put in those first-time crosses where Kenny whipped him the ball and he didn't even need to take a touch. So I'm really impressed with Target. You know, I think he linked up well with Ryan Sessegnon. Going forward, he looked really good. And I think he was strong defensively too, which, you know, his first job is really to defend.
Right.
So he did that well and he did attacking well. So I think it's a really good signing and I'm really impressed with him.
So am I, and I look forward to seeing how that partnership gets along as they play more and more together. All right. Here is a signing that happened on the last day of the window that surprised me, Ryan. I didn't see this one coming. I know there was speculation on it, but it didn't make sense to me. But I do like this signing. I want to get your thoughts on Fulham signing right back Cyrus Christie from Middlesbrough. I've seen him a great deal. I remember him at Derby County and also how he played against Fulham with Middlesbrough. Thoughts on this signing?
Yeah, so as an Irishman, I'm delighted they've signed Christie. You know, he plays for Ireland, so I'm happy with
right.
that. But I think, as opposed to the other two, which are loan signings, which are meant to have immediate impacts, I think Cyrus Christie is more of one for next season, you know?
Right.
I think the whole thought process about Christie was that he became available last day of the season window. You know, he wasn't expensive. It is a position I think Fulham will probably need to strengthen in the summer, because I don't know if Ryan Fredericks is going to sign that new deal. So it made business sense for Fulham to sign someone. We know how good he is. We know he's probably one of the best right backs in the league. I don't see him playing that much this season, if I'm honest. There's no way he's going to displace Ryan Fredericks from that side unless Ryan Fredericks has a really poor run of form. But I can't see that happening, because, you know, last season he was on top of his form. This season he's been good. So I can't see his form dropping enough to let Cyrus Christie have a go at right back this year. I think next year is when we'll see Christie really come into it. And I think with Christie, you know, there would have been dialogue between Tony Khan and Christie and the club. And I think he would know that his chances are going to be limited this season. But, you know, going into next season is where he can really stake a claim and really push for that starting spot.
Okay, well, let me throw this at you. This is just a thought of mine. Could you see a scenario where potentially Christie and Fredericks could be playing together, where one is higher up the pitch in midfield or part of the 4-3-3 setup up front, much farther up the pitch? Could you see that happening at some point? Maybe we don't see Ojo and Piazon or Cabano or Aite on the right. Maybe you see Christie or potentially Fredericks.
Yeah, I've seen it branded about a bit, but you know, when you've got players like Cabano, Aite, Piazon, Ojo, when you've got those type of attacking players out on the right, I don't really see Djukanovic saying, you know what, let's put a defender up there. So it's a possibility, and it's something that he could bring on from the bench to to surprise people. But in all honesty, I don't see that happening so much. We know how much Djukanovic likes Piazon. We know how much he likes Aite. We know how much he likes Ojo. So he's gonna stick with those playing as that wide right player, I think. So I don't really see Christie playing in that position.
Okay, excellent there. All right, we now have to talk about Fulham bringing in on loan from Newcastle striker Alexander Mitrovic on loan. And this one caught me completely off guard. I was not expecting this, Ryan. And I got to be honest with you, we've only seen him for a very short period of time. I already like what I see. I can see his value to Fulham Football Club. But this one was a shocker to me. Your thoughts on the loan signing of Alexander Mitrovic?
I think it was a brilliant signing. You know, transfer deadline day was a funny one in that Stefano Okako, his move broke down, and it looked like for a stage that Fulham weren't going to be signing a striker.
Ryan, how close was that to happening, what you were hearing?
It was pretty close to happening, but once other clubs came in from the continent, you know, that's where it died down. He didn't want to drop down to the Championship. So once those clubs came in for him, he was never going to come to Fulham. So once that broke up, it looked like Fulham might go without getting a striker. But, you know, the recruitment team persevered. They kept looking for one. And Mitrovic popped up after his move to Anderlecht fell down. And I think it's a really good signing. You know, it's one Djukanovic is happy with. He knows about Mitrovic. He knows how good a striker he is. Mitrovic has Championship experience. He's got a fiery side to him, which I like in a player. And he brings something different to the side. You know, his hold-up play. He looked right to get other people involved in the game against Forest. But he'd bust the gut to get into the box to get in onto the end of the crosses. And that's something we haven't seen from a Fulham striker. I like Font. He's very intelligent. He makes good runs, but he doesn't make runs into the box like that. He looks to bring players away from the attack and allow other players to do what they do best. And obviously Kamara has just got sheer pace. So they're all three different players, but I am looking forward to seeing Mitrovic when he's fully fit in that side, because I think he's going to cause teams all manner of problems.
I totally agree, Ryan. And what's interesting about him, and I'm glad that you mentioned this, that we have not seen a player with his skill set, his complete skill set, because I think he does offer the hold-up play that, say, Chris Martin offered. But I think he does much, much more than even Chris Martin did because of his ability to be able to head the ball, to be that active. But he also does what you just said that I think is so important that I think could get lost when we talk about Mitrovic, is that he can get all of his teammates involved and give more opportunities to the players on the wing.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like they've missed a Chris Martin type player. Chris Martin, his ability to hold up the play, drag defenders into a battle, and exploit space for the likes of Sean Eluka and Ford Aite last season was really important. But what he didn't have is he didn't have the fitness or capability in order, after he's done that, to get into the box, to get into the end of the crosses. Whereas Mitrovic, you know, he's a lot younger. He seems a lot stronger. So when he was doing it against Forest, you know, 2-3 seconds later, he was in the box ready to get onto the end of the crosses. And I think that's really important, is that not only have they got someone that can start the first phase, they've got someone that can get in second and third phase, get onto the end of the ball and stick it in the back of the net.
I totally agree with that. I could just see that in a very short period of time, what he could potentially offer. And I'm excited about the addition of Alexander Mitrovic. All right, let's now transition. Let's talk about something that I think is extremely important. Would you agree that holding on to Fulham's key players is just as important as the additions?
I think it's probably more important, to be honest. You know, if they don't keep hold of those key players, the people incoming, they're not adding anything to the team. They're just plugging gaps, if you want. So the fact that he's managed to keep hold of Ryan Sessegnon, Tom Kearney, Ryan Fredericks, it means that the team that's done so well all season, well, for the last few months of the season anyway, is still there. The basis is still there. And then adding the likes of Target, Christie, Mitrovic is adding even more quality to a side that's already doing well. And when you look at Ryan Sessegnon, you know, he's a once-in-a-generation player. He's going to be a world beater one day. Ryan Fredericks, you know, I don't know if there's a better right back in the league than Fredericks, to be honest. And then obviously Tom Kearney. Any team with Tom Kearney in it is a good side. It's unfortunate that his injuries limited him this season, but even when he has played, you know, key passes, amount of passes, pass accuracy, he leads in all those stats. So I think keeping hold of them has allowed Fulham to build on an already solid foundation. And it's just going to mean they're, instead of playing catch up to the other sides, they've now gotten ahead. You know, they've improved which they didn't do last January to a degree.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right. Let's get a rating for you for the window as a whole. From 1 to 10, you know, it's funny because two of my co-hosts gave it a 7 overall. What would be your rating for the overall window?
I think I'd give it an 8, to be honest. I think they corrected the mistakes that the recruitment side made in the summer. I think, you know, the recruitment team realized, okay, our summer recruitment wasn't the best. This is what we need and we're going to go for it. So they've brought in players with Championship Premier League experience. They've brought in a left back, which Fulham needed. They brought in a forward that Fulham needed. So they've listened to Djukanovic there. Cyrus Christie, they're planning for the future there at right back with one of the other best right backs in the league. So I think that's good business. They've kept hold of all their key players, which is, you know, gives them a 6 out of 10 at least in itself. The only reason I wouldn't give it any high is that there's still no centre back. And I think the centre back one is probably, like, for me personally, that's where I would have improved the squad myself. You know, if you look at Kalas and Ream, if they get injured, you've got Dennis Odoi coming in, and while he's been a good player, he's not going to win you championships at centre-back. So I would have liked to add an experienced centre-back to go into that side, but, you know, they're not doing too badly at the moment. So, yeah, 8 out of 10 overall, I think.
Okay, very good there, my friend. I understand why you gave that a rating of an 8. I think Tony Khan deserves a good amount of credit, him and his staff, for not just holding on to his key players like you already mentioned. I think that's huge. But also the additions that that he brought in, I think, have just added to the team. All right, my friend, let's now move on. Let's talk about match decisions for Savica. There are several of them that are very interesting, and I want to get your thoughts on. And let's start here. Actually, a friend of mine, Chris Davidson, who has a Facebook group called Fulham Fan Zone, and I just want to mention, because he actually messaged me about this, you wrote about the return of Shea Ojo, and he had a question about, now when Ojo is fit to play, it actually gives Savica a decision to make. And you wrote about this in your article that is entitled "Liverpool Loanee Shea Ojo Returns to Fulham Training Ahead of Bolton Clash." I'm just going to read this because I think this is a situation that Savica has on his hands. And this is what you wrote. However, with Ojo's return, Fulham now have 6 fit loanees, meaning one of Tomas Kalas, Lucas Piazon, Oliver Norwood, Matt Target, Alexander Mitrovic, and Ojo will definitely miss out on a place in the squad. So I think this is a big decision from match to match that Savica is going to have to make. Your thoughts, Brian?
Yeah, it's huge. If there's one thing the transfer window has given to Djukanovic, it's a headache in this sense, in that, you know, the recruitment team have produced 6 fantastic loan signings there, but only 5 of them can get into the matchday squad. It's a nice problem to have, but it is a headache for Djukanovic, because we've seen, you know, Kalas has started regularly. Ojo, Djukanovic was a big fan of Ojo before he got injured. He's right. A big fan of Piazon. Oliver Norwood has slotted into that Tom Kearney role so well. Matt Target looks like he's going to be the starting left back, and Mitrovic is going to probably be the main striker come the end of the season. So, you know, one of them has to miss out, and it's not going to be an easy decision by any stretch of the imagination. I asked Djukanovic about it last week, and he said it's up to the players to make the decision for him, you know. Yeah. It's up to them to show who should be included in the squad. But if you look at it tactically, who misses out? I suppose you're looking, Kalas isn't going to miss out because he's a centre-back. Target's not going to miss out because he's going to be playing left-back. Mitrovic won't miss out because he's going to be the striker. That leaves you with Norwood, Piazon, Ojo. Norwood's probably not going to miss out because Kearney's not fit enough, and Norwood's playing well in that midfield. So you put right. him in there, and that leaves one of Piazon and Ojo.
That's Piazon, why I think the decision yeah. will be made.
And Piazon's playing so well at the moment. You know, I think he adds a different dimension to the side, and Djukanovic is a big fan of him. But at the same time, I like Ojo. I thought he added right. a different dimension to the side too when he was playing, and Djukanovic likes him again. So I don't think it'll be too much of a problem for this game coming up. I think Ojo will probably miss out on the squad again just because he's only just returned to full training, and it's an easier decision for staff to make. You know, he's not quite fully fit yet. He's just returned. We'll give him another week out. It pushes that selection problem back a week. But when it comes to to actually making a decision based on merit. It's such a tough decision. I don't think I'd be able to call it at the moment. You know, I really can't see who would miss out.
It's very hard. He has a really hard decision to make from match to match. And I'm glad that you said that he had said that it will be determined by the player. Do you think it also could be determined, Ryan, by who they play, the opponent?
I think so, yeah. You know, you've got to pick your side based on who you're playing. So sometimes it might be better for Ojo to play a game rather than Piazon. You know, Ojo's a lot more direct down the wing. If a game requires that, we might see Ojo in the side as opposed to Piazon. Or if Kearney comes back and is playing fully fit, you know, we might see Norwood drop out for a stage maybe. But yeah, I do think it's going to be a variety of things. You know, who's impressing in training, who's fit, and who they're playing. You know, all of those will come into Djukanovic's thinking when he picks which of these loanees will have to miss out.
Yeah, it's a fascinating situation there, and not an easy one. So I'm glad that we're talking about it. I want to thank again Chris Davidson for messaging me to bring that to your attention. He is in charge of the group Fulham Fan Zone on Facebook, so definitely check that out. But very good topic for us to talk about. So thank you again, Chris. All right, let's move on. Let's now talk about some other decisions that Savisa needs to ponder. Here's one. With the addition of Target, does this mean we should expect to see Sessegnon further up the pitch on a regular basis? And also, what does that mean for Dennis Odoi?
Yeah, I think we will. I think Target coming in definitely means Sessegnon is going to be played further up the pitch. We know that's what Rafa Suarez was brought in originally to do, but he couldn't quite play the way that Djukanovic wanted up on that wing, which Target clearly can. So I do think this means we're going to see Sessegnon in that further forward position, which we've all wanted to see. You know, we know how good he is that far forward. He was named PFA Player of the Month today for 6 goals in 4 games, something like that, which is that's a ridiculous stat. So yeah, I do think that means we're going to see Sessegnon further up the pitch. What that means for Dennis Odoi, I think Odoi finds himself a victim of circumstance. You know, he hasn't played poorly. He's played well when he's played. It just so happens that he's playing in such a competitive part of the team where, you know, you've got Sessegnon, now you've got Target. He's not done anything that he deserves to be dropped for. It's just that these players fit into Djukanovic's style of play better than Dennis Odoi does. So I think Dennis Odoi will now go from playing left-back to being the cover left-back, cover central defender in the squad. I think he'll find his place on the bench every week, but I don't think he'll get much game time between now and the end of the season.
Okay, very interesting with this situation with Dennis Odoi. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on that. All right, let's move on. Here's another one. We've already talked about Mitrovic, and this got me to think about Abubakar Kamara. So with the addition to Mitrovic, do you think we'll see him as a starter on a consistent basis? And will he rotate his strikers based on the opponent for, say, Font and Kamara? Because I'm concerned what now happens to Abubakar Kamara. I see Rui Font can play in different roles, but Kamara I see as someone that really has one role, and that's to be a striker. And what happens to him, Ryan? Because I see him as a confidence player. I think he needs to be playing more. So what will happen to Kamara? And do you see Mitrovic as the starter now?
I think for the moment, I still see Font starting. You know, Mitrovic isn't 100% match fit.
Okay.
So he's not, for the next few weeks at least, until he gets up to match fitness, he's not going to be starting games. So I think we're still going to see Font as the main striker for the time being, while Mitrovic gets up to match fitness. I do think once he is fully fit, though, that Mitrovic will be the main striker. But what's interesting for me is, I mentioned previously, they're all completely different players. You know, Font is an intelligent player that looks to get others involved with his runs. Mitrovic likes to hold the ball up, lay it off and get into the box, whereas Abubakar Kamara is a direct, pacey forward. So they all have them different qualities that we saw on Saturday. All three were in the matchday squad. So it gives Djukanovic that option, depending on how the game's going, whether it needs Font on with his intelligent run, his intelligent play, or whether it needs a Kamara on who's just going to scare the living daylights out of defence with his sheer pace, or if it needs Mitrovic on to hold the ball up and bring others into play while he gets himself into the box. I think it's a really nice problem to have, and it's a good front line.
Yep.
You mentioned Kamara being a confidence player. You know, he's 22 years old. I don't think he was brought in the summer to play the role that he's played this season. I think he's the club's second top goal scorer with 7 goals or something like that.
Right.
But he was given a 4-year deal in the summer. So I don't think he was brought in to play as much as he has done this season. I think circumstance again has dictated that he's had to play, and he's done well when he has done. But I've always felt that having Kamara, you know, he'd benefit from that striker that's a bit more experienced than him. It's his first season here. You know, he's never been away from France before. He needs to bed in, and he's done really well for himself. But I don't think he was ever really meant to be a starting striker this season. You know, that's going to come next season and the season after. So I think having someone like Mitrovic there, who's done Premier League, who's done Championship, is only going to help Kamara with his experience. And if he gets on, you know, he adds something. Yeah, he adds something different. So I do think Mitrovic will become the starter with Font and Kamara coming off the bench, depending on what's required.
That's very interesting that you put it that way. And when you think about Kamara's role, it probably has expanded because of the situation that they had with the strikers. And this now gives him an opportunity to learn a little bit more, like you mentioned, from Mitrovic. I think that's fantastic that you pointed that out, and that he's more thought of as a striker for the future. So his growth might not be taken back. Maybe it'll be taken forward by having this the seasoned striker there that has more experience than he does. So that this might actually help him. That's actually a good point. And he could still come off the bench and have an impact the way that he has. I just hope he continues to play in certain situations, because I think he can offer Fulham a great deal in a role. And you basically have said that. All right. Let's now talk about Tom Kearney, because I'm curious your thoughts on this. Listen, I think Oliver Norwood has played very well. And we always talk about the midfield three. So I'm going to give you a scenario that I think Slavisa is going to be thinking about a great deal when Kearney is fit to play. When Kearney returns, who drops out of the midfield three?
Yeah, it's another conundrum that Djukanovic is going to have to figure out. I think, you know, playing devil's advocate here, everyone's like, when Tom Kearney comes back, who drops out?
Yeah.
I think maybe you need to look at it the other way. When Kearney comes back, he's going to have to force someone out. You know, there's no reason why you should drop any three of them, because they're all playing. Maybe it's up to Tom Kearney to force himself back into that side. And at the moment, I think he might have a bit of trouble doing it, because Johansson looks to be back to his best. I thought he's fantastic on Saturday. Kevin McDonald has been Kevin McDonald all season. You know, he's Mr. Reliable for Fulham, and he's carried on plugging away, doing all the dirty work. And then Oliver Norwood has really stepped into that creative role well. He's had a few dodgy games, I think, but
right.
I thought on Saturday he was very good. You know, he was passing, his distribution was very good. He mixed it up, and he looked to get the side going. So it's a tough one. I think the obvious choice is that Oliver Norwood drops out when Kearney comes back, but it's going to be up to Tom Kearney to prove he should have a place in that squad with Oliver Norwood playing so well.
Let me ask you this. It's a very interesting situation that Savisa will have on his hands. And I asked this to a co-host, and I want to get your thoughts on it. Let's compare the midfield three last season to, say, this season without Kearney, with Norwood put into that role. How does it look to you? How does it run? How does the engine run differently, or does it run similar?
I think it runs similar. You know, Fulham clearly have a style of play. They clearly have a way they play, and it's the players have to fit into that style. It's not up to the style to fit the players. So I think it's very similar. I thought the game on Saturday was very, very similar to the way Fulham ended last season. You had Kevin McDonald in that role, holding in front of the defence as the anchor. You had Oliver Norwood in front of him, going left to right, dictating where play was going. And then you had Stefan Johansson bombing up and down, linking defence to attack. So I think that was very similar in the way that Fulham were playing at the end of last season, where they went on that fantastic run to get into the playoffs. The difference is Kearney was in that middle role last year, and Norwood is in it at the moment. So I think they're very similar.
Okay, very interesting there, Ryan. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about several of your articles that you've written lately. Like I mentioned, you've been prolific lately, and you've written some very interesting things. I want to start here, because this one caught my eye this morning, and definitely want to talk to you about this, because I've thought about what you wrote about. So I'm glad that you wrote this morning. It is entitled, Fulham's Dominant Approach Will Be Key to Their Charge to the Premier League. I'm just going to read an excerpt of what you wrote, and then we could talk about it. I'm just going to take it right from the middle of your article. Fulham are relentless. It's a trait of Jokanovic's that we've seen since he came to the college. He likes his teams to dominate play, get on the ball, and play football. And while that all looks pretty in the possession stats, it's what it physically does to the opposition that has been key to Fulham's rise from nothing to promotion candidates in the space of 3 months. The Cottagers have scored a goal in the 88th minute or later in the last four games now. Oliver Norwood's last-minute penalty against Middlesbrough, Abubakar Kamara's 88th minute goal against Burton, Ryan Sessegnon and Kevin McDonald in the 90th-plus minute against Barnsley, and now Stefan Johansson in the 90th against Forest. It's not luck, nor is it just an anomaly. And you go on and you go into more detail about it. But let's talk about your article, because you bring up some wonderful points. You talk about Fulham basically grinding out victories, and that's what they're doing, Ryan. So let's talk about this, because I'm fascinated with how this has now happened. It happened last season. I believe it probably happened with Jokanović when he was at Watford too. So this is a style situation. So let's talk about your article and what you're seeing here.
Yeah, so a main point of Fulham's style, as I'm sure everyone will know, is that they like to dominate everything. They like to get on the ball. They like to have the possession. They like to get shots off. They just like to dominate football games. And when you're coming up against a team like that from an opponent's point of view, you know you're in for a really long day. You're not going to see much of the ball. You're going to do a lot of running. And I think part of the reason why Fulham started so slow is that the pre-season wasn't quite good enough. So Fulham's style of play means they have to be extremely fit. And, you know, we're right in the middle of the season now. Everyone's in their peak fitness. And that's why it's working so well, is that everyone at Fulham is as fit as they can be. Whereas at the start of the season, they weren't quite up to those fitness levels, so they couldn't keep going for the 90-plus minutes that they do now, and teams would, you know, wouldn't be struggling against that dominance. Whereas now, because the side is so fit and they dominate the football all game, we saw Forest. Forest were very, very good defensively. Ayak Karanka sets his teams up very well defensively. But after 70 minutes, they were spent, and Fulham could still keep going and going and going. And that's when we saw Fulham really take apart Nottingham Forest on Saturday. And it's the same thing throughout the last month and a bit. That's what they've done. They've ground teams down, they've dominated the ball, and they've just physically spent the other team. But when it comes to it, Fulham can continue going. So I just think it's a combination of Djukanovic's style of play and the fitness levels the side have at the moment.
It's a great point, and it has paid dividends lately, and I think it will continue to as the season progresses, as they basically wear teams down, Ryan. That's what you're talking about. As the match gets to its later stages, they are fit enough that they can keep up what they're doing, and they've just tired teams out, and then they can get these late goals. That's basically what we're talking about here.
Yeah, exactly that. You know, it's all about tiring the other side out, dominating them all the game, and then having those better fitness levels to really go on at the end of the game and start putting goals away.
Okay, excellent. Okay, Ryan, now I want to talk about another one of your articles that, again, is interesting, and I'm glad that you wrote this, because it's something that Fulham fans want to know about a great deal, and that's the contract. So you give a full list of how long each player is tied down for Fulham, and again, what I'll do here is I just want to get your thoughts on the contracts. What stands out to you? The one thing that stands out to me is that several of these contracts, especially in the 2019 season, many of them have a club option for a further year. So I want to get your thoughts on that. I find that very interesting that several, and I mean several of these contracts, have this club option.
It's smart business from Tony Khan, really. You know, they give him the contract, but then they say the club are going to have the option of extending that a further year. So they're not going to have a situation like they have with Ryan Fredericks at the moment. I just think that's really clever business from Tony Khan, you know, giving them contracts. But then if they're doing well, you're not going to be in a situation where you could lose them for another year. You tie them down. The player hasn't got a choice because he's already agreed to it. It's up to the club whether or not they take that option. So it's just clever business from Fulham to ensure that they don't lose any of their key players for nothing.
Okay, very good. What are your thoughts about having Tom Kearney's contract so long? And again, that probably has played a factor during the January transfer window. So is that really the contract where you really look at and you say it's actually very good business from Fulham because they really protected themselves, especially against teams from the Premier League?
Yeah, it's exactly that. You know, we saw with this interest in Kearney over the winter, if he was going to leave, it was going to take a huge bid from whoever to prize him away because of that long contract. It means Fulham have no obligation to sell any of their players, especially Kearney. They've got the option of another year as well if they want it. So it's really good business protecting themselves from losing their players on the cheap and also ensuring that their players are there for a long time.
Were you surprised by the interest of Kearney at the very end, Ryan?
I was a bit surprised. You know, we all know, everyone associated with Fulham knows anyway, about his knee injury this season. And, you know, we know he hasn't played as much because of it. So it was interesting whether, you know, teams were looking at him and thinking they might get him on the cheap because he hasn't played as much. It was an interesting one. You know, obviously we know how good he is. And maybe teams were looking at him, hoping they could get him a bit cheap because he hasn't played as much because of injury and hoping the injury wasn't too bad. You know, it was teams around the bottom of the division that are looking for players that are going to add some value to their side. Teams like West Ham, West Brom, those teams where Kearney would add some sort of value. But, you know, I think they underestimated Fulham a bit. And I think what this January showed is that Fulham aren't there to be pushed over. We saw it with Ryan Sessegnon. You know, Tony Khan came out and said he's not going anywhere, despite the likes of Tottenham and Man United all hovering around him. We saw it with Ryan Fredericks as well, that he wasn't going anywhere. And we saw it with Tom Kearney. So I think what we discovered from this window and what other teams will now know going into summer is that Fulham aren't there to be pushed about. You know, they're a business. They're being run well as a business. And if teams want Fulham's prized assets, they're going to have to part with some mega money to get them.
Okay, excellent there, my friend. All right. You also wrote an article, basically, I shouldn't say basically, you were predicting the month of February. So let's go through your predictions here, my friend. Thoughts on the month of February for the upcoming matches?
Yeah, so I thought I might as well have a go at predicting, seeing as I see so many of the games. And it's an interesting month. You know, we've got, once Bolton is out of the way, we've got a run of 6-7 games where they face teams that are really in the playoff mix, which, you know, we looked at the start of the season, we saw that opening and thought, yeah, that's a tough opening for Fulham. But looking back now, the teams we thought that were going to be around the playoff places, to a degree, aren't round there. You know, Reading, Sheffield, Wednesday, they're not there. And it's this period here in the middle of the season that no one really gave any, they gave a bit of, you know, attention to, but they didn't give as much attention thinking it was going to be the make or break part of the season. And those seven fixtures that we've got coming up, you know, the likes of Villa, Derby, Wolves, Sheffield United, Preston. That's a massive, massive period. So, obviously, we've got Bolton, first of all. That's not going to be an easy game, you know. Fulham it's typically the type of team Fulham have struggled against. We look back to that Sunderland loss up at the Stadium of Light, and they were down the bottom. They were struggling, hadn't won at home for a year, and Fulham went there and lost. So, it's been the type of game Fulham struggled with this season. But the way the side are playing at the moment, you know, it's that dominance again. I think the last 25 minutes will see Fulham really be in the ascendancy. So I think they'll win that one. Then the next game, you've got Villa at home. That's a really tough tie. You know, it's going to be a great game at the Cottage. They're in great form. Fulham are in great form. They're both looking at automatic promotion. I think it'll be a draw, that game. You know, I don't think Fulham will win it. They'll have a chance to win it. But I think the two sides will cancel each other out. Then you've got Bristol City. Bristol City did a job on Fulham at the Cottage. And it was probably one of the worst I've seen Fulham play all season. But Fulham had the third best away record in the league. You know, going away from home seems to suit them because teams have to attack at home. And we know how Fulham like to pick off teams on the counter like that. So I think they'll beat that one. And of course, you've got Wolves at the Cottage. You know, Wolves are a Premier League side. I can see them finishing top 10 next season with the squad they have already. So that's going to be a really tough test. You know, it's two good style of football. But when Fulham went to Molineux in that bad run, it looked like a training game for Wolves.
Right.
I don't think it'll be the same. I think it'll be a bit closer this time. But I don't think Fulham are quite at Wolves' level. I do think Wolves will probably beat them there.
Okay, well, let me ask you this, because you have them getting 7 points out of 12.
Mm-hmm.
Will that be good enough leading into the months of March, April, and then, of course, in May? Will that be okay if they got 7 points out of 12?
I think they'd be happy with it. You know, you're only looking at one defeat there, two wins and a draw. So yeah, I think they'll be delighted with that, especially when you've got the likes of Derby and stuff in March. If they take 7 points and only lose to Wolves, I think they'll be very happy with that. It keeps them in the hunt.
Okay, excellent there, Ryan. All right, let's quickly talk about the rest of the season. So let's get your thoughts on this. How confident are you that Fulham can end the season in a playoff position? Are you very confident, mildly confident, or not confident?
At the moment, I'm very confident. You know, I think the way the side are playing, the form they're on, after those that group of fixtures, the games they've got left, you know, I'm pretty sure they'll finish in the playoff places, especially with the squad they've got now. I do think they'll finish in the playoff places at least.
Okay, excellent. And the last topic, because again, I didn't even want to think about this, say, a month or two ago, because it was so far away. But now it's really not that far away, but they still would have to play at an extreme level to get to this point. But do you think Fulham have a chance to legitimately contend for second?
They do have a chance. At the moment, they have a chance, yeah. You know, they've got to play those teams around them. They've got to play Derby. They've got to play Villa. So there's the chance there to take points off them. Whether or not they will is another matter. You know, all those sides are very strong. I don't think they will finish second, but at the moment, they've got a chance to contend to it 100%.
If they were not to get second, who would you think would be the team to get second? Would it be Derby? Would it be Aston Villa?
I think it'll be Derby. I think Derby will finish second.
There you go. Let me ask you this, Ryan, because I look at the teams around Fulham, and you've already talked about Wolves, and Wolves are by far the best team. Like you said, they're already a Premier League team, and I agree with you on that. But I don't think that there's another team around Fulham that's better than them. Am I wrong to feel that way?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think all the teams after first place, you know, after Wolves, are all quite similar. It's just going to depend on how they do against each other. So I wouldn't say you're wrong in thinking that at all. I think they are all very similar, and any one of them could get that second automatic space. I just think Fulham, you know, that early run might have done them in a bit for that, because 6 points, it doesn't seem much, but when teams are on form, you know, that gap can be quite a big gap to catch.
Okay, very good. I have one final topic. I know I said we were just going to be ending, but I just thought of something that I wanted to ask you about. And this is my theory that I've been throwing out there on Cottage Talk, that good teams find different ways to win, Ryan. And I look at the Brighton Hove Albion team from last year. They were not dominant, but they found ways to win. The way that Fulham won their last match was just a different ways to win. Would you agree with me on that?
Yeah, I do think Fulham have found different ways to win. You know, we've seen them grind out a win against Middlesbrough. We've seen them struggle in the first half against Barnsley and then really come through in the end. And we've seen them dominate games like they did against Burton. So, yeah, I do think they've got it in them to win differently. And it's pleasing to see as well, because last season they could only win one way.
Right.
And that got found out in the playoffs. But this season they seem to have that little bit more about them, that little bit of difference. You know, they'll thump a team 6-0. They'll beat a team 1-0 away. They'll come from behind to win. So, yeah, I do think they've got different ways of winning this season.
Okay, very good. Ryan, before we go, just tell everyone where they can follow you on Twitter and also your podcast. Let's talk a little bit about your podcast. It's All White. I listen to it. So just share everyone where they can read you, where they can follow you on Twitter, and then, of course, your podcast.
Yeah, so obviously I'm on Get West London. You know, we cover everything with Fulham every day. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at @r_o_donovan. You know, you get all the Fulham stuff on there too. And yeah, we do our weekly podcast called It's All White to supplement the stuff we do online, all the articles and stuff like that. It comes out roughly once a week. So yeah, you can, if you like listening to my voice, you can listen to it on there as well.
Okay, excellent, my friend. Listen, thank you so much for joining me, Ryan. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
That's all right. It's always great to come on here, mate.
Okay, excellent. Well, that's going to be it for this episode. For my guest, Ryan O'Donovan from Get West London, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.